Well, welcome to the second hour of Focus, our morning talk program. I'm Jeff Bossert in for David Inge, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. The technical director is Jason Croft. Sunday night marks the 84th annual Academy Awards from what traditionally has been known as the Kodak Theater in Hollywood. Millions will flock in front of the TV, and somewhere around 40 million based on the evidence of the last few years. Billy Crystal will lead the ceremonies for the ninth time. And we'll see what actors, writers, directors, producers, and other filmmakers walk away with in terms of Oscars. You've just heard some of the music from what many say is the front runner in the nominees, the silent film The Artist. It has 10 nominations. That was sent some of the score from The Artist. That has 10 nominations, only to second to Martin Scorsese's Hugo, which has 11. Over the next hour, we're going to talk a bit about the Oscar ceremony, the nominations, predictions, and the year in cinema in 2011. If there's a particular movie you want to chime in on that you think maybe was cheated on the Oscar nominations or just one of your favorite films of the year, your calls are welcome. We're at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. I'm joined in the studio this morning by Richard Laskowski. He's now retired, was Associate Director of the Unit for Cinema Studies and Associate Professor at the University of Illinois. He's also a film critic at the News Gazette. Welcome. Thanks for joining in.
Oh, happy to be here.
And joining us on the phone is David Desser. He's Emeritus Professor and former Director of Cinema Studies at the U of I. He's currently an Adjunct Professor of Critical Media Studies in the Department of Film and Television at UCLA. David, thanks for joining the show.
My pleasure.
So I'll turn to you first, Richard. How did you feel about the year in movies? And a question for each of you. And does this list of Oscar nominations and all reflect what ended up being, you know, among your favorites or among the best films of 2011?
Well, I frankly was a little disappointed with this past year. The Oscar nominations for Best Picture, though, include some of the films that I thought were the best. But then this year they have more nominations for Best Picture than in previous years.
Yeah, they did 9 this year, 10 recently, back a couple of years. And we can talk a bit about that, too, the whole process for nominating the films and why they decided to expand that list. David, how did you feel about the year in film, and does the nominee list at all reflect that?
Yes, I agree with Richard. The year was kind of maybe average or below average in terms of really great pictures, but the ones that were nominated are certainly the best sort of major pictures of the year. So I agree entirely.
Do each of you do a top 10 list or some sort of, maybe I'll start with you, David, as far as what you think maybe the top honorees were, should be, or some kind of rough idea of what the best films were?
No, I never actually do that. I just enjoy the pictures. And I also know that the films that may be what I feel are the best films are most likely not going to get nominated, so I just keep that to myself, so to speak. So, it's pretty clear how the Academy is going to nominate. They rarely go for the blockbusters, and they rarely go for the really small, quirky movies. So, these are what I call middle pictures.
Well, what were some of them? What were some of your best movies of 2011?
Well, I probably, for American movies, I probably would have gone for Drive, which did get some nominations in craft categories, but was shut out in everything else. But that Drive is sort of my kind of American movie, so that's an example of something that I knew wouldn't get a Best Picture, despite the critical, you know, laudatory reviews, and everybody liked it. But so that's an example for me.
Well, were you really surprised at the snub the many feel Albert Brooks got not being nominated for Best Supporting Actor?
Yeah, that was a big surprise. I agree. You know, so I would have thought with that. But you know, I always find that the acting categories, especially in the supporting roles, tend to be the most competitive in terms of who gets nominated. So you know, if you look at who's nominated, it's difficult to say that Albert Brooks is, you know, somehow better than Kenneth Branagh or Nick Nolte or Christopher Plummer. So in that respect, it's not a big surprise. But that's the kind of award the Academy, or at least the kind of nomination the Academy likes to do when somebody steps outside his comfort zone and does a really good job. So that was a surprise for me, but not the fact that Drive didn't get a Best Picture was no surprise.
Well, they're talking about a pretty violent film. Is that, does the politics then play into that, or the kind of things that are nominated?
No, I wouldn't say it's that. I just think that it's a small picture. Its box office is minimal. It's possible that most people, well, not most, but many people haven't even heard of it. It's also very sort of stylish and, you know, it's what I call very, very cinematic. But it's the kind of movie that appeals to critics and younger audiences. The Academy tends to be older, and they don't tend to go for these sort of very fast-paced, sharp, slick kind of movies that sometimes younger people. Not that I'm a younger person, but that's still the kind of movie that I like.
Well, Richard, an example or two for you among your favorites, or what, you know, what should have been nominated or was?
Well, I'm a little surprised that Ides of March didn't wind up with a Best Picture nomination, at least. And it has, you know, four great actors in it: George Clooney, Ryan Gosling, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Paul Giamatti. So it certainly got nothing in the acting categories or Best Picture category. It got adapted screenplay, but that's about it. The real surprise for me was that Cave of Forgotten Dreams by Werner Herzog.
Oh, yes, documentary.
Didn't get a nomination for a documentary. Mm-hmm. But then when we get into things like the documentary categories, the selection process is so strange in some ways that I suppose it's not entirely a surprise. For documentaries, they have to be put forward by the filmmaker. And for documentary features, they have to play for a week, a commercial play for a week in both L.A. and Manhattan. And then a committee from the documentary branch makes a decision on the nominees, picking the top five, and then everybody votes on it. So it's... there's no telling why it didn't wind up there. I mean, there are a lot of places where it could have gotten ruled ineligible, but it was certainly a fine film.
Well, I actually happen to have those documentary qualifications, the Rule 12 special used for the documentary awards, and if you need to look at any of these, but you probably know them,
yeah.
Gone to learn them pretty well. But, yeah, I was not aware that a documentary had to have this run in Manhattan and in L.A. And another movie that some people had mentioned in the documentary category was just shown on PBS, The Interrupters. I don't know if you've had a chance to see that, but about gangs in Chicago and efforts to stop that violence. Filmmaker Steve James, who also did Hoop Dreams in the 90s and was also not nominated for Best Documentary. So I don't know if that had something to do with the eligibility rules or just exposure.
Well, that's always the category that seems to be the most controversial, oddly enough. So they keep they keep their string alive of not nominating films that people like and people have seen. Certainly the Herzog documentary played, you know. Richard's absolutely right. That's just kind of astonishing. But it certainly had its commercial run. It played probably a month here in L.A.
I'm Jeff Bossert. This is Focus. We're talking with Richard Lisconsky and David Desser about the 2012 Academy Awards honoring the films of 2011 and just the best movies of last year. If you have a film you'd like to comment on, calls, questions are welcome at 217-333-9455 or outside the Champaign-Urbana area, 800-222-9455. You also can send us an email at will-talk@illinois.edu. What sort of interest does the ceremony itself hold for you? Was there a time where maybe it was more exciting for you, or do you just kind of say, well, you know, this is kind of predictable, and are there certain things that you look out for, Richard, in terms of, you know, what'll happen Sunday night? Not only who wins, but maybe some of the speeches and that sort of thing.
Oh, well, this year I'm looking forward to the ceremony insofar as there are going to be only two songs. That have been nominated. So that might make for a more compact, faster-moving ceremony. At least I hope so.
Well, I understand.
Well, they're not performing the
right
song. But there's protests and lobbying to try and get the songs performed.
Well, yeah, I guess there was a really interesting report on All Things Considered about that this week, and the Academy or the producers of the show are not excited about the prospect of having to do a ballad and recreate that on a live show. And I remember in the past, growing up, they would recreate a song from a James Bond movie with all kinds of explosions and a big dance line and that sort of thing. And you've had a lot of ballads performed on stage this year, but it probably has something to do with the length of the show, as you mentioned already. Is that maybe the driving force here? Is let's get this thing barely, right around 3 hours?
Well, the producers have the say, and they did determine that the ballads would put a drag on the show, and they're not doing those kind of. The reason a lot of people used to watch the ceremonies is to see what awful things the Academy would do in terms of musical numbers, and there's still things that are very, very famous, or let's say infamous, over the Academy's years, and that's why I think a lot of people just like to see the stars, but there's also the possibility that something untoward will happen. But you can't beat the presenters and the honorees. It's just fun. I think someone like myself, I watch the Golden Globes and other things. It's just nice to see the people there and what they'll have to say, even if there's no surprises. A show like the Golden Globes just gives out awards and it moves pretty quickly, but every so often it's touching or it's funny. So, if you like movies, you watch the Academy Awards. I don't think you expect anything great. People don't have that much investment in who wins or what, unless you're in some kind of, $1,000 Oscar pool or whatever.
Do either of you have a favorite host in the years you've been watching?
Well, mine's Billy Crystal, actually.
Yeah, I suppose mine would be Billy Crystal as well.
I think Bob Mandela brought this up yesterday on All Things Considered. I mean, he's a comedian, and generally when you have maybe actors or people that aren't as good at ad-libbing, they tend to fail pretty quickly. And last year we had an actor or an actress named James Franco and Hathaway, and that didn't go over so well.
No. It did not. No, but Billy Crystal also, he's been in movies, so he's a movie star, and he's a TV personality, and he's a stand-up comic, so he's a good host. I mean, I remember, Johnny Carson and all that, but I think Billy Crystal is a very good host. Some other hosts have been disappointing. I didn't think, last year was particularly bad, and I'm a fan of Hugh Jackman, but I believe he did it 1 year, and that didn't really move me that much.
So, what else would you like to see in the Oscars? Are there categories, maybe, or things that maybe don't belong here anymore? How many people know anything about, know what sound effects editing means, or cinematography, and things that are quickly honored? And there's some more technical awards that are given out that aren't even in the actual ceremony itself.
Right. I've been watching the Oscars for, several decades, and I still haven't been able to figure out the difference between sound mixing and sound editing.
No, I agree. I mean, I can't either, but I don't see the need for any more categories, but I like the idea of keeping both the technical and the short films, just so that people watching, even if they don't care, they'll never see. Just remember that there's a lot to film behind the scenes, and there's other kinds of films besides, the Hollywood features. So that's just my feeling, because I don't see any big deal to keeping. But I remember when they used to have the technical awards, and then they shunted them off to a kind of ceremony. But what I've always said about the Academy Awards ceremony is that the thing they don't do that they should do more of is they should do more with the actual films. These are, things that people spend $50 or $100 million making, and you can't beat that kind of budget on a TV show, so why not show more films? Or more, longer excerpts from films that people may or may not have seen, and that makes it more exciting. I mean, you're honoring films. They're always torn between being presenting prizes for films and thinking they're a television show. But as a television show about films, why not show more films?
I enjoyed when in some years they would have they would often do a large retrospective of different movies, maybe Oscar-nominated films, and just a quickly run through clips, and I tried to identify each of them. I'm expecting Sunday night they might do what they've done typically with Billy Crystal, is digitally place him into a scene of some of the honored films, and you know, mm-hmm. have him portraying one of the characters. I just to put this in perspective, talking about categories, 1929 they started out with 12 categories, then they had 7. Now we have 24 categories. Is the show too long? The longest I've seen, looking back in some research, 4 hours and 23 minutes in 2002. I don't know what caused it to go on that long. But is the ceremony perfect? Or I guess we covered some of this, but anything else that like you said? Maybe they could describe more about what somebody does in terms of sound effects editing, or maybe that would put viewers to sleep.
Well, you know, one reason the thing goes on longer is, now that I'm back in Los Angeles, is you have to remember it's not as late in L.A. as it is back east. When the ceremony is finally over back east, it's only 9 o'clock, 9:30 in L.A. So people forget that. They're not so tired as the people back east watching the show.
And actually, according to the rules as they now stand, there is the potential for another category, and that would be original musical. But that's only activated if there are a certain number of musicals produced during a year, and the Academy decides that there is a sufficient number for nominations.
We're talking with Richard Lisoski, a retired director of the Unit of Cinema Studies and associate professor at the U of I, and Philip Critic for the News Gazette. Also, David Desser, emeritus professor and former director of cinema studies here, and currently adjunct professor of critical media studies at UCLA. Welcome your calls or questions about the Academy Awards Sunday night or any other movies you want to point out that maybe didn't get their due justice. 333-217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455. I was doing research on this last night, and then you get sucked into the world of YouTube, and I went to the 1980 Oscars, hosted by Johnny Carson, and one thing they did with the acting nominees is did a brief retrospective. Of course, he had a lot of big names that year, but on how this person started out, and now they've progressed to, you know, Dustin Hoffman, for example, had progressed to his role in Kramer versus Kramer, which he won for that year, and it seems like maybe they don't feel like there's time allowed for that kind of thing, or maybe because obviously the actors aren't as well known to be able to talk a bit about what else this person has done. So I don't know if you had any particular favorite speeches from an actor in the last umpteen years watching the ceremony, or something unexpected, or maybe just a favorite moment among those acting nominees that you're really happy to pull through, kind of like watching your sports team finally win that championship.
Well, Melissa Leo's speech last year. Melissa Leo's acceptance speech last year was interesting.
That's right. Yeah, my favorite was when Marlon Brando didn't show up and sent a Native American to claim his prize.
We've got a caller on the line from Champaign on line one. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's an interesting program. I'm curious if either of you have followed up on the award winners over the years. How well do they fare in becoming classics that last a long time, like, for example, White Christmas? I don't even know if the awards were given back in those days. That's just a question if there's any lasting quality to having been chosen. Over? I mean, that's a radio term. I'll shut up and listen.
It's always interesting to look at the winners to see when the Academy has made some serious mistakes, so to speak. And part of it was that the best film of the year? What was it up against? You know, did they blow it in terms of, gee, look at the people who were nominated and look what they picked, versus, boy, this won the Academy Award. This film is just, forgotten. So, you could look at it both ways. My favorite example, is a film that at the time everyone thought was just a terrible selection, but it's become a kind of cult classic, and that's Rocky. Which, you know, you say, how could this be the best picture of the year? What a, you know, what a mediocre thing. But Rocky is very, very famous and beloved, and so however you think about it, it was a cultural moment. You just take, you know, just bad movies like The Greatest Show on Earth, which won the Academy Award in 1952. You know, who cares about that? So it's 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. Many films didn't deserve it and have faded from memory, and a lot of films that won are classics, you know. You can't argue with Ben-Hur. You can't argue with West Side Story. Things like that. You know, Sound of Music. Those are beloved. Those are, you know, that kind of thing. But other movies just were bombs and don't deserve to be remembered.
and also, Oscar winners from the first two or three decades of the Oscar presentations. Might be forgotten because they're not readily available to be seen. But over the last, say, three decades, pretty much everything that's been nominated or won is still available on DVD or
sure,
on demand. So people can keep seeing those. And even if they might not be the greatest films of the year, they're more likely to be remembered than, say, something that won an Oscar in the mid-30s.
Thanks for the call. We're talking about the Academy Awards coming up Sunday night. And, you know, it's rare, too, I guess, that some of these Best Picture honorees, not often are the nominees also among the top moneymakers sometimes. But and it's possible that a Best Picture winner, something maybe like The Hurt Locker from just recently, is going to have a few copies on the shelf at the video store, whereas obviously a lot of the movies that weren't well reviewed and didn't, if it made a lot of money, will have, you know, 10 or 15 copies on the shelf.
Yes, it's rare. It's rare that the big hits, the biggest hits, are nominated or certainly not awarded. I think it started back in the 70s. When there was a big distinction between the super blockbusters and the nominees. But every once in a while, you have a film that matches, such as The Return of the King, The Lord of the Rings. But The Hurt Locker was an example of a film that just had no box office. But, you know, the Academy isn't, you know, they say they're not in the business of rewarding commerce, but choosing the best. And I think that they do a good job insofar as rewarding what, I call the middle-level movies. No one's really going to go to bat and say that the biggest hit of the year is necessarily the best film of the year, like, you know, Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn. No one really thinks that's going to be a Best Picture, nor should it be nominated.
Well, maybe I'll ask each of you maybe kind of your way that you go into film criticism or maybe films that you have shared with students in class, things that you think are, it's been brought up, what Best Picture nominees that really still are worth checking out, or films that were snubbed. Are there maybe some of your all-time favorite films or movies that are really things that are examples of, you know, this is a great film in terms of its direction, style, this guy's performance, something like that. I know you're probably talking about a lot of things in the syllabi that each of you have held for class, but are there certain things that you'd like to maybe need some more exposure today?
Well, for my part, I've been teaching courses on animation for the last decade or so. So live action films have not been in my classroom purview, I'm afraid.
Well, I look at that sometimes the way the Academy does do a good job. You know, you might say that critics and historians generally say that Citizen Kane is the greatest film ever made, and Citizen Kane didn't win the Academy Award the year it came out. But then I look at it the other way and say Citizen Kane did get nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Screenplay. So in that respect, the Academy was right, and even if they didn't give it the Best Picture, they did. But I don't teach by, I actually tend to teach foreign films, so the particular Oscar things. But, you know, there are, I have taught something like On the Waterfront, which is an acknowledged classic and a very, very important film historically, and that was given the Best Picture of the year in 1954. So, as I say, the Academy is only one way to look at things, but it's a nice gauge of what middlebrow critics thought were the best films of the year. You know, back in the 50s, when film tastes were being shaped by French critics, and they got to really like genre pictures and small pictures, well, those were the kind of pictures that didn't get nominated. But of the pictures that did get nominated, sometimes there was, you know, some very fine films such as On the Waterfront and or a musical like Gigi, which won. I mean, Gigi is a great musical, so the Academy has its moments.
We've got a caller on the line, line one from Urbana. Go ahead.
I just saw the Oscar-nominated animated shorts at the Art Theater, and I try to catch those when they show up there. And it's really, I really appreciate that theater. I think there should be an Academy Award for small theaters that bring movies to us that are worth our consideration. I don't go to see them, all the ones at the Art Theater, but I see things there that I might not see at one of the multiplexes. And I wanted to point out to people who don't know that the Art Theater is trying to switch to being a co-op to spread out the work of picking up films and asking people to become share owners in the co-op. We just bought 4 shares. They're $65 each, and it seems to me to be an investment in our community to have that kind of theater, especially one that has the added benefit of being easily reachable in downtown, so people can walk there if they happen to live within walking distance or take the bus. And so I urge people to check out the website. You know, just Google Art Theater Champaign, and you can find the information about the co-op, and you could even sign up online or at the theater. So I have to say, I didn't used to be so interested in movies, but it's making it more and more possible to see interesting things. And while I can get many things on Netflix or at the That's for Entertainment in town or one of the other video stores, I have to know what movie I might be interested in. And that's another thing that the Art Theater does, is bring movies to my attention. They even have a newsletter, an email newsletter, so you know what's playing. You can see links to interesting films. And pops up in my email box once a week. So they're doing a great job, and I'd like to really encourage people to encourage them by taking part in it. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Yeah, that sort of theater is a great resource, showing things that we wouldn't ordinarily see. The fate of theaters of that sort is also the topic of could be a topic of discussion for a whole hour or two, with the digital projection now coming in.
David, anything? Well, go ahead.
Well, sure. No, I would say that when the so-called art theaters began after World War II, that was their job, was exactly to call to people's attention movies that they might not otherwise see, and people got to trust the taste of the programmers, so to speak. So people would go to theaters based not on what was showing, but based on the theater, and they would just go see these movies, and you know, the theater would be a kind of a resource for bringing to people's attention movies they wouldn't ordinarily know. So you know, it's like the problem with, say, buying books on Amazon is you can't really browse, and you have to go, you know, to their recommendations and people who bought this and bought that. But the Art Theater, you know, does the browsing for you, and then they'll show trailers, of course, for movies that are coming. So these kinds of theaters are crucial, and their survival is tricky. Big cities have more of them. Small cities, small towns don't tend to have too many. But that's, you know, the caller is exactly right that the idea of seeing all the animated shorts in a theater is kind of priceless. As well as the movies that don't come to the multiplex, and that's exactly what these theaters are for.
So, I'm joined by. I'm sorry.
They should be supported. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. again, thanks to the caller for bringing attention to some of that and the nominated shorts. I saw those films as well. Jeff Bostard, I'm joined by Richard Laskowski and David Desser discussing the 2012 Academy Awards and some of the best films of last year. We're going to pause here for a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, we remember Barney Rossett, who published Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, Samuel Beckett, and fought censorship with the publication of D.H. Lawrence's Lady Chatterley's Lover and Henry Miller's Tropic of Cancer. Rossett died Tuesday at the age of 89. We'll listen back to a 1991 interview with him. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
WILL programs are made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, offering more than 3,000 certified organic products, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar and bulk foods department, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
If I'm a Muppet, then I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
There you hear one of the two Oscar-nominated songs for this year's Academy Awards, Man or Muppet, from the movie The Muppets. Jason Segel there from one of my favorite films of the year, not maybe the top 10, but a really fun film. And we touched on the song category and how there's only two nominated songs, and I guess that trend will continue. Maybe they would just will the category even have life in 2013?
Well, this time it didn't have to do with the necessarily lack of good songs, and I think the music branch may look at their nominating procedure, but it has to do with the scoring and the way that people scored it. They just didn't get enough, perhaps, if they either lowered the scores necessary to get an award, I mean, to get a nomination, or if they changed it entirely, that they might have more. But I don't think it has to do with the lack of original songs necessarily.
Yeah, that's right. The nomination process involves people in the music branch voting on all the songs, and it's not exactly one person, one vote. They assign scores to each song from 6 to 10.
Right.
And you have to wind up with an average of 8.25,
I think.
Yeah, 8.5. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there could have been a number of songs at 8, for example.
Right, 8.4.
But I don't know what happens if you have two people voting for one song, and one votes 9 and one votes 10. But those are the only two people voting for it. That would be a 9.5, but I don't think you'd want to have a nomination with just two votes. So I'm not sure exactly what happens in those cases.
I've got the eligibility rules here, too. The one thing that I point out to me, it's got to be used in the body of the motion picture or in the first music cue at the end credits. So if the credits have rolled for a couple minutes and then they go into a different tune, I guess it's too late.
That's why the Madonna song from W.E. was not eligible. It appeared too late in the credits.
Ah. Yeah.
Yes, and that happened once in a James Bond movie where the title song was nominated, but everyone preferred the end credit song, but it wasn't eligible. So I don't remember what the James Bond movie was, but I do remember that happened one year.
Well, we got 15 minutes left in the show. We're talking about the Oscars with two professors who have studied film extensively. We're welcome for your calls for Richard Laskowski or David Desser, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Something I wanted to bring up is the membership of the Academy. There was a report from the LA Times just earlier this week, and the study found that Academy members are less diverse than the movie-going public. The Oscar voters are nearly 94% Caucasian, 77% male, but African Americans make up about 2% of the Academy, and Latinos are less than 2%. And the median age of the Academy members is 62. Either of you want to chime in on who might, how many of these people are elderly and long retired actors that are trying to work in the screeners of the videos they get of these movies?
Hey, elderly? Come on, I'm over that median age. So.
The scandal for me, besides the fact that it's 94% white and 77% male, is that you see out here that so many of the people watch these movies on screeners. And I would hope that no one is watching Hugo, say, on a screener. I mean, that's just absurd. And I've said that for years. You know, they used to give the free videos. You know, the Academy members get to go for free during the Oscar season. So, I mean, if you can't even be bothered to go to a movie for free, then you really don't belong in the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. That's the way I feel about it. But yeah, they're older and they're whiter and they're maler, and it's just you know, one shouldn't be too surprised. But on the other hand, I don't know that you want the Academy to be necessarily the same age as the demographic of movie going. Should they be 18 to 24?
Some of those figures are a little bit misleading, or at least in terms of not giving an accurate picture of things, because the acting category or acting branch is the largest by far. It accounts for 25% of the members of the Academy, and that's evenly divided, male and female. But it's sort of also the tail that wags the dog when it comes time to actually vote on all these categories, because that, as I said, that is by far the largest block.
Yes, and then everyone gets to vote for all of all the categories.
Yeah. And in some of these branches, there are no women in those particular branches.
That's
and
right.
To get to be in the Academy, you have to be nominated by two members from that particular branch. I mean, as criterion, or you have to be nominated for an Oscar. And so, if there are no women in your branch, then it's kind of less likely that there will be in the future.
I went to the Academy site, obviously, for some of these eligibility rules, and then you have a sampling of people like art directors, cinematographers, actors, directors, and for actors, it lists 7-8 people here that have either been nominated: Colin Firth, Harrison Ford, Jake Gyllenhaal, or Lauren Lilly, James McAvoy, Monique, Julianne Moore, Christoph Waltz, and that's who it mentions, is just a sampling of the actors, but. I guess just to give us an idea of who belongs in people who have, you know, been in popular films or been nominated the last few years. We don't have a full idea of who all makes that up.
They keep those lists kind of close to the vest.
Right.
They don't really publicize all the names, certainly.
Right. It's not a secret society, but they don't publish a list of their 5,700 members. But if you are a member, you're allowed to say that you're a member.
Well, David, you mentioned it would be a crime to, you know, watch Hugo at home in video and then vote on it. Well, then, and that's number 7 in the publicity eligibility rules. The Academy remains firmly committed to the principle that motion pictures competing for Academy Awards should be seen and heard in a theatrical setting, but they don't object to the distribution of screeners.
No, they sure don't. No. They're all over the place. So, no, it's true. It's true. And, of course, a lot of Academy members don't live in Los Angeles, although that Times article did have the Academy membership by zip code as well.
Well, another thing they pointed out here, too, is some people on the roster are TV actors. Eric Estrada, Jacqueline Smith, Gavin McLeod from The Love Boat. And it wouldn't imagine that they would belong to the Academy, but the eligibility rules are you know, there's some just fine print there, and they qualify.
Well, that's true.
You also have to be in two films that have been at least, I believe, commercial successes. So the people you mentioned might have had supporting roles,
right,
in
sometime in their career, you know.
Maybe. I can't remember too many Eric Estrada films.
No. Well, in the last 10 minutes or so here, do we want to talk about who should win the Oscar, who will win? Maybe even, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Albert Brooks and Drive. Any other any other snubs that you want to point out, or particular performances that, you know, our listeners should go out and get, rent the DVD, or when it's available, you know, or get on Netflix, or...
Well, I liked Dominic Cooper in The Devil's Double, and you know, he plays Saddam Hussein's son. Is it? Yeah, I forget which one. And a childhood friend who looks enough like him, who's forced into being his double. So, you know, it's an interesting performance playing somebody who's evil, somebody who's forced into acting as though he's someone who's completely evil. But that was, yeah, completely ignored.
Well, David, any unsung heroes there on the acting list? Maybe that's not on the nominees?
I'm not sure about the acting list, but I'd like to have seen, or people might want to see, this is not an obscure movie, I hate to do that sometimes, but I like 50-50. Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a young man stricken by cancer. And I think that's probably a wonderful film about the sort of movie disease that doesn't either make it too sentimental or too absurd. So I'm not sure I expected to see it as a Oscar nominee, but just in terms of a nice film, if there had to be a 10th Best Picture, I might have gone for 50-50, although I probably would have gone for Bridesmaids, actually, if there was one more Best Picture.
Well,
it does what it does so well.
It did get its share of attention, and I want to point out an Illinois native, a Plainfield native, Melissa McCarthy, and I was happy to see her list on the Best Supporting Actress.
The screenplay, that was a nice honor. I think some people were pleased, but also surprised to see it get the original screenplay nomination. Though I'm pretty sure that'll go to Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris.
What else will win on here? Anything else that didn't get the attention it deserved? Maybe regardless of category, things that you want to point out or hope that they walk away with a golden statuette Sunday night.
Well, Richard, let's see,
all the odds makers put the artist as getting a picture, director, and actor. That wouldn't be my pick, let's see.
What would you be your best picture?
I lean towards The Descendants, just because it's nicely done. It goes in directions that you don't really expect, and generally good acting, an interesting story.
I'll have to chime in. I think that was my favorite film of last year. And another one that I consider a snub, an acting nomination, was, I don't think I'm going to pronounce her name right, but Shailene Woodley, the actress who played the daughter in that film, I thought that was another snub, someone not nominated for in a supporting role.
Well, again, I thought the acting in The Descendants was terrific, and I liked The Descendants just because it doesn't tend to do what American movies generally do, and that's what Alexander Payne is should be acclaimed as a director working in a different mode. But actually, my own particular choice for Best Picture of the ones that are nominated would actually be Hugo. But that's how I feel about that. But as I was saying earlier, the toughest category is often in supporting, and the Shailene Woodley did a great job, but the question there would not be should she have been nominated. The question might be who should not have been nominated. So, you know, was there someone who just was not good at the expense of Ms. Woodley? And I think the answer there would be no. I mean, those are five great actresses and very, very fine performances. I agree with you. She was terrific, but that's a tough category.
Well, it seems there's a little less predictability, maybe to the at least a little more fun as to who might walk away with supporting Oscars. Although I guess Christopher Plummer is the favorite for best supporting.
Yeah, the odds-on favorite there. Yeah. That would be the shock of the night, I think, if he didn't get it.
Well, other categories in the last few minutes here, and we could even get down to the little technical ones of things that you'd like to see walk away with an Oscar. I was really surprised as far, mentioning Best Actor, and again, he probably won't win, but I was really shocked that Gary Oldman had never had an Oscar nomination, realizing that once he was nominated for Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy this year.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who think he deserves to win. I'll tell you the truth. It would be shocking if George Clooney didn't, but Gary Oldman is a real favorite, and he's terrific.
What are the odds for Jean Dujardin? I assume he and Clooney might be the two top favorites for that? Or?
I would think so.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a tough year. I mean, the smart money's going with The Artist, but it wouldn't surprise me if The Descendants got it, and it wouldn't surprise me if Hugo got it. It would surprise me if The Help got it, but I bet that if you could ever count the votes, you'd see a lot for The Help as well.
Do you two put more weight into the SAG Awards and some of these others that are given out by critics? I mean, they did a SAG Award. The cast of The Help was honored just a couple of weeks ago. Do you tune into those shows and excited to watch some of those?
Well, yes. The awards given out by the guilds are voted on by people who are in the different branches of the Academy. There's quite a bit of overlap there. So they're good indicators. They're not certain indicators. They're not 100% certain. But, you know, over time, you know, the odds favor somebody who, say, wins the DGA award getting the director's nod at the Oscars.
Yes, that's one of the better predictors. But in recent years, I think it's broken down a little bit. It's about 70%, which is good odds, but not great. But as I say, to me, this seems to be a tougher year. But if The Artist sweeps, no surprise. But if it doesn't, no surprise.
David, you mentioned a little while ago watching a lot of foreign films. I don't know if you wanted to chime in about the eligibility rules for how the nominees rank for Best Foreign Film, because some critics are upset when certain movies aren't nominated for Best Foreign Film.
Well, yeah, it depends. Those have to be, there are obscure laws about how much of the language has to be not in English, and who gets to nominate the film in the first place, and then the Academy members have to prove that they've actually seen the films before they can vote on which one. So that, along with documentary, those tend to be the most surprising. But there, the controversy tends to be what films are nominated by the official nominating board. So the Germany, for instance, has no nomination this year because of the some controversy. So that depends. The foreign films also are interesting because the odds-on favorite among the critics and a lot of audiences is the Iranian film of Separation. But I would venture to say that three-quarters of the time the winner is not the film that most people have seen. The other thing is In Darkness, a film that's a Holocaust theme. The Academy loves its Holocaust movies, so to speak. So that's a possibility to sneak in. And the French-Canadian films have done very well at the Academy over the years, and there's a French-Canadian film, so good luck picking which one will win.
We got just a couple of minutes left, and a caller on line one. Let's get to your question from Champagne. Go ahead.
Hello. Brad Pitt was nominated, I think, in the Best Actor category for Moneyball, which I thought was okay, but in Tree of Life, he was absolutely outstanding, and I don't understand why he would be nominated for Moneyball and not for Tree of Life if you look at the body of work. Could you explain that to me, or is it just a matter of opinion?
Well, there is an Academy rule that if you're nominated for two films, there are two performances in the same category, in this case we'd be actor in a leading role, you can only have one nomination show up, the one that gets the most votes in the first round of selections in the actual nominating process. So if Pitt did get a lot of votes for Tree of Life. It wasn't enough to edge out Moneyball. And I would assume more people saw Moneyball than Tree of Life.
Yeah, Tree of Life was nominated for Best Picture, but I don't think that they pushed. You know, there's a nominating process also that involves campaigning. And so the campaigning, they thought that he'd have a better chance to get a Best Actor nomination for Moneyball than he would with the more puzzling Tree of Life, which is a Best Picture, Best Director type movie. You know, you've got another great actor in there, Sean Penn, but people just didn't think that the nomination in the acting category was likely, so they pushed him for Moneyball, and they did get him a Moneyball nomination. So that, in that respect, it was successful.
We got to wrap the show up, but thanks so much again to my guests, Rachel Laskowski, a former associate director of the Unit for Cinema Studies and associate professor, assistant professor at the University of Illinois, a film critic at the News Gazette, and on the phone, David Desser, emeritus professor at Cinema Studies at the U of I and adjunct professor of critical media studies at UCLA. Thanks so much for joining me, and well, I hope some of your predictions hold true.
Thank you.
Thank you.